Shopify grows your business no matter how far or big you grow. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Whether you're selling your fans' next favorite shirt or an exclusive piece of podcast merch, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/income, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/income now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in.
Mystery Backroads. We're your hosts, Mike and Dan. And in this podcast, we will explore lesser-known stories, legends, people, and places of the Buckeye State. So buckle in, here we go. Welcome to another edition of Ohio Mysteries Backroads. In today's episode, we journey out into Lake Erie and find out more about a little-known island called Rattlesnake Island. Across the aisle is Mike. Mike, how are you?
I'm good, Dan. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Okay, so this story, do we need a snake bite kit before this episode is done?
Well, I hope not, but it's probably a smart idea to have one handy.
Hey, well, let's get into it. Let's hear it. Oh, I want to hear rattlesnakes.
Okay. Lake Erie, which lies on the northern border of Ohio, contains several small islands. Put-in Bay is probably the most well-known one, and it's a popular spot in the summer for people seeking a small taste of island life. Maybe not Jimmy Buffett-level island life, but it's still a fun getaway today. And just to the southwest of Put-in Bay is a small, exclusive, secretive island called Rattlesnake Island. While it doesn't have the notoriety and the golf carts that Put-in Bay has, Rattlesnake Island has a dark history. In fact, the Rattlesnake Island Club, which owns the small island 2 miles west of Put-in Bay, is perhaps the most secretive and exclusive country club in all of Ohio. The cost to join is purported to be around $90,000, and the identities of the 68 members have never been revealed.
You know, this sounds like that Bohemian Grove. How do you say that? Do you know what that is?
Yeah, that Bohemian Grove. Was that that place in California, that really secretive place where all the muckety-mucks and the haves? Is that the same place?
Yeah, I think it's a real secretive, all-men thing, and they do. And there's been all kinds of conspiracy theories about it, and who knows what goes on there, but they, you know, this story that what you've described so far kind of reminds me of that place. But this place sounds pretty fancy.
Yes. Well, I wouldn't know. My application must have gotten lost. The island itself is an 85-acre island located on Lake Erie near Put-in Bay. And it's one of the smaller islands in Lake Erie. The name Rattlesnake Island comes from the Ottawa Indians, who named it that. And it was from the actual rattlesnakes that formerly inhabited the island, and supposedly from the overall shape of the island. Two small inlets near the northern tip were said to resemble a rattlesnake's rattle.
So are there still rattlesnakes there now?
I think most of the rattlesnakes now are long gone, but maybe some other snakes regularly visit there. During the latter part of the 1700s, stretching way back, the Lake Erie Islands were still part of the Canadian territory. However, fate would turn when the Connecticut Land Company in 1806 surveyed them as part of the Connecticut Western Reserve. But none of these Lake Erie Islands were ever a part of the Firelands land grant. Before it was a booze-fueled free-for-all, Put-in Bay would indeed become a strategic location during the War of 1812. This is when Oliver Hazard Perry, Commodore of the United States Fleet on Lake Erie, would rendezvous with General William Henry Harrison at Sandusky Bay. And following discussions concerning the upcoming campaign, the commander selected Put-in Bay Harbor for the American naval base.
So back then, Put-in Bay was a pretty big deal.
Yes, and today it's kind of hard to imagine that in this day and age. From this strategic location, Perry was able to observe British fleet movements and eventually engaged and defeated them in the Battle of Lake Erie. Perry's victory gave the Americans control of Lake Erie and a relative calm prevailed among the islands. However, in 1854, Abigail Dunning of Hartford, Connecticut, sold Rattlesnake Island to Horace Kelly of Cleveland, Ohio. Soon thereafter, post offices were established on South Bass Island in 1860, North Bass Island in 1864, and Middle Bass Island in 1864 as well. In fact, the mail service would be handled by the Ford Trimotor, which regularly ran trips from the mainland to Put-in Bay and then over to Rattlesnake Island. Other than the rattlesnakes, Rattlesnake Island sat largely uninhabited at the time, and on June 22, 1861, Rattlesnake Island would become part of the Put-in Bay Township. For the next two decades, the only known residents of Rattlesnake Island were the David Hammond family, who had moved there from Vermilion, Ohio, including several of David's children who were born in the island. The island would remain relatively calm and peaceful during this time. The modern history of Rattlesnake Island began with the purchase of the island in about 1929 by Hubert Bennett, and he was the owner of the Toledo Scale Company, which developed the island by putting in a lodge, a harbor, and an east-west landing strip. When Prohibition became a reality, it was long rumored that the island played a major role in bootlegging operations since it was situated strategically between Canada and the U.S. and extremely remote.
So weren't a lot of these remote locations like rumored to have been used for bootlegging?
Yeah, you know, growing up in northern Ohio along the lake, you would hear a lot of that, that this place used to be used for bootlegging and that place used to be used for bootlegging. But this has a confirmed past that the bootleggers from Canada would drop their booze and the Cleveland rum runners would pick it up and they use that island as a staging point. So after Bennett, who had just bought the island, died, the island would pass through many hands. At times, Rattlesnake Island was, among other things, a summer retreat for Catholic boys, a sanctuary for Barbary sheep, and a public resort. One owner, Dr. James Freckleton, who would eventually become another member of the RIC, or Rattlesnake Island Club, he would establish his own post office there under a little-known federal law that allows privately run post office where the government does not provide regular service. Henceforth, Freckleton stamps are a must-have for collectors. So this guy was issuing his own stamps. Sounds kind of cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's very interesting. I never knew that.
I didn't know that either. So a second north-south landing strip would be added in the 1950s by a Catholic order. Freckleton further developed the island, but economic and market conditions forced the sale of the island in 1989, and this is where the story gets good. Rattlesnake Island then became a private island that was resold in 1992 for $4.6 million. Freckleton and 65 other secret investors repurchased the island in 1999. Today, Rattlesnake Island is only accessible to the 65 members of the Rattlesnake Island Club. There are currently only about 15 private and exclusive lots on the island, and the sale of property on the island is controlled by the Island Club. In fact, all of the activities on the island are controlled by the Island Club, and it's this secrecy which led people to scratch their heads a little bit and wonder what goes on at Rattlesnake Island. Due to the secrecy and exclusive nature of the Island Club, rumors began to circulate about mob activity controlling the island. Most of the members traveled to the island to take advantage of the private facilities, including a bar, a restaurant, large pool and hot tub, health club, tennis courts, bocce courts, miniature golf, and much more. Inside the main building, underneath the bar, is rumored to be a racquetball court, basketball court, pool table, dart board, big screen television, a pinball machine, card table, even a suit of armor. There are two landing strips for airplanes, which come and go often. These grass landing strips double as a small golf course. The pilot's lounge doubles as a pro shop with access to scorecards and golf balls. Near the runway is a small cage containing peacocks. Members and guests on the island travel from one place to another on an electric golf cart. And there are also 7 hotel rooms which members can stay in for the night. Rattlesnake Island clothing can be purchased from a store located in a small shed adjacent to the restaurant. In recent years, a second marina was even added to the island.
So this is interesting to me because with all these things available, all these facilities and different restaurants and all this stuff, that people have to work there, right? So is this occupied year-round, or is it how's this work?
Well, if you're familiar with Northern Ohio, at least in years past, the lake often freezes over, and it allows people to drive actively from island to island. And they think this might have contributed to the rumor of it being mob controlled. So somebody started the rumor to keep people away during the off season. However, to directly answer your question, yes, people do live there year round, although it is a limited staff. Only a caretaker and chef stay there full time. The island's workers are trained to recognize each of the members and their families, both by appearance and the boat that they come in on. Any non-members will immediately be turned away by armed security guards in one of the island's 2 boats before the intruders even have time to dock their boat.
Man, I can imagine these employees must get paid pretty well. I mean, wow. I mean, and the stories they could probably tell. So how do you become a member of this place?
Well, in order to join the Island Club, one of the current members must quit, and the potential member must receive recommendation from at least 2 of the island's current members. The cost to join is estimated to be between $90,000 and $200,000 initially, as well as a monthly maintenance fee.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty exclusive club. Are any of these names public, and how secret is it?
Well, while the members' names are not made public, a liquor license purchased in 1999 lists Bob Serpentini as president of the island's board of trustees. And if you're from the Northern Ohio area, Bob Serpentini has a string of auto dealerships, and he's very popular, including the phrase American and proud of it. So if you listen to the radio from Northern Ohio, you're going to know exactly who this guy is.
On a personal note, I have buying my cars probably for about the last 15 years. I actually buy my cars from Bob's brother, who has his own separate dealership. And I'm not going to name it or say it, but yeah, I do know his brother. So I've been buying cars there for years. Oh. And also, I'm sorry, what?
Okay, but for 15 years of buying cars from this guy, the next car you buy, you got to negotiate a trip to this island and then bring me along with you. Imagine the fun we could have.
Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting place. I mean, all these things that they have there, and obviously the price is crazy amount of money. So I don't think it's money I'll ever see. But yeah, maybe I'll talk to his brother and we'll see what we can come up with.
That sounds very fun.
So what's to become of the island? Is it just going to stay like this now for the foreseeable future?
Well, I think the island itself is probably ready for the next chapter, whatever it may be. I don't know what the future will hold for the island, but I don't think I'm going to visit anytime soon without lawyers, guns, and money.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I'll go get the boat ready. Okay, Dan?
Let me go through the couch. I'll look for some loose change. Maybe we can put something together, get 90,000 together, and head out there.
Yeah, this is a really cool story. I've heard of this island years ago. I heard that this kind of thing was going on over there. I get a personal note. I have family members, one family member in particular who owned an island up in that area. He just retired and sold his island. And then I also had a ex-brother-in-law whose family owns an island up there as well, and they still own it. So, I've heard these stories over the years, and I had heard that Bob Serpentini was connected to the island, and I have not mentioned that to his brother. I'm not sure I want to know, or if he wants to even know, I don't know, but this is a very cool story.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I had heard stories like that kind of growing up too, really before the internet. You just heard rumors that if you get too close to it, somebody will shoot at you, and there's going to be problems for you if you try to go there after hours. So there's a lot of legends and rumors about this place swirling around, even some not so pleasant ones that have occurred.
Well, when I run into that kind of money, you know, you can be my guest and we'll go take a look. We'll have a drink at Serpentini's bar up there.
That sounds fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, that is a great story, Dan. Thanks so much for sharing it.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. And stay tuned for more.
And we'll see everybody next week.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more like it, head over to OhioMysteries.com. With over 500 podcasts to choose from, there's sure to be one that's going to keep you captivated. I'm Dan, and I can be found at YouTube at North Coast History and Haunts. My partner Mike can be found at Facebook at Too Late for Autographs. Thanks for listening.
Hello, my name is Peter Zablocki, and I'm a historian, author, and college professor. I'm thrilled to invite you to check out Evergreen Network's History Shorts podcast. Every Tuesday and Thursday, join me on a journey through time, exploring the little-known and hidden gems of history. In each bite-sized episode, I'll dive into my original research to bring you intriguing historical curiosities you've probably never heard of, uncovering the fascinating stories that have shaped our world. From forgotten figures to overlooked events. And the best part? I've condensed all this historical goodness into manageable chunks, perfect for your on-the-go lifestyle. Whether you're commuting to work or squeezing in a quick break, History Shorts fits into the little time you probably think you don't have. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of the History Shorts podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.